School back in those days, 1947 and onwards, was very regimented. You only spoke when you were spoken to and you felt that you had the right to do so. Otherwise, you'd be in trouble. It was extremely rural. We lived in a fairly poor farming community. The farms were small. It was straight after the war, and the district was recovering from wartime austerity, and life was tough, and not many children came to school with shoes. Clothes were patched, so it was tough. There wasn't very much money in the schools either, and so it was a matter of use up whatever you could, save materials. Paper was scarce, and you even had to reuse your lunch paper. The interesting thing was that in second class, a teacher we called Ozzie Davis, who was very good with the flicking you with the ruler if you misbehaved, and she'd been teaching for quite a while, and she did like using a slate. Each child was given a slate, which, as the name implies, was a piece of machined slate in a wooden frame, and we used these for mathematics, but in particular, it didn't waste any paper, and if you made a mistake, you could get rid of it very quickly before she came around to the ruler. It's double-sided, and you actually use a piece of slate to write on it. We started off with pencils. It wasn't until our writing was good enough before we were allowed to use a pen. Generally, that was in fourth class, and we were issued with a pen holder and nibs. The pen was dipped into an inkwell, and originally when I first started, inkwells were made of crockery. You dipped it in, tried not to get it too much on, otherwise it would all run off again. Used it on your book before, hopefully you didn't get too many blots. Every page ended up with a blot somewhere on it. It was almost inevitable. The ink came in a little brown packet, about so big, and you cut the corner off it, carefully tapped the contents into a beer bottle, filled the beer bottle up and put a rubber cap over the top. And then you gave it a good shake, and then you held your finger over the air hole and put the nozzle into the inkwell, released your finger so that the ink would run in, and then took great care before it became overfilled. You put your finger back on the air hole and took it away and filled up the next one. One of the problems was that you could very easily let it overflow when the ink would run down into the desk and make a mess of everybody's books. The regional desks were made out of cast iron frames, decorative frames on the sides, and the desk was actually made in a unit with the seat in front, the folding seat in front. So if the table and seat weren't fastened down properly, you'd rock and the ink would flow out of the inkwells. So you had to be careful that you, or when you were writing, that the person behind you didn't give the desk a shove and put blots and scrawls all over your page. So they had those desks to save space because they could pack a large number of children into a classroom. Even when I started teaching myself, I can remember a class of 46 children in a regular-sized classroom, twice the size of a class you'd have now today.
These days, children have access to the internet, which gives them access to unparalleled amounts of information.
Yes.
As a teacher yourself, during the 60s, you had a stack of reference books, I imagine, encyclopedias?
By that time, there was a library when I went teaching myself. When I was a pupil, there were no libraries in schools. You had a set of books which were believed to be appropriate for that class, and that's what you had. When I went teaching, libraries started to develop in schools, and encyclopedias were the main source of knowledge. Very few reference books, mostly encyclopedias. But of course, it was still very much talk and chalk. We were still teaching children to write with one of these pen holders and a pen nib. Blackboards were starting to become green instead of black. The portable blackboards that stood on an easel, they were discontinued and they were gone. Essentially, it was still chalk and talk. The Cuisenaire rods came in during the 60s. Not so very many years after I started teaching, they started to die out. One of the problems was the lack of teacher training to use these new innovations. And quite often you'd have a very short one-day in-service course, and the next day you were expected to be an expert. And that system didn't ever work. And right to the end of my teaching career, they were still following that same pattern. It was a failure.
As a teacher, what were some of your favourite teaching tools?
The science curriculum in the 70s and 80s became more innovative, so you introduced all sorts of learning materials, magnets and balancing and all sorts of equipment that, and I really enjoyed that kind of thing. Craft, I really loved craft.
You taught handwriting, obviously.
Yes, I taught handwriting, and I taught handwriting till the end of my teaching classroom career.
What do you think about the fact that children don't study handwriting anymore in school?
I think it's a shame, and I think it's probably a feature of the computer age. In my early teaching career, handwriting quality was something to be esteemed. Correct procedure for holding a pen. We emphasised first finger on top, second finger down beside, and the thumb on the left-hand side. And that was strongly emphasised. That was the correct way to hold a pen.
Do you have any advice that you could give to parents who are exacerbated by the school's use of modern technology?
You have to live in the age that you're in. We can't go backwards. We can't go back to using slates, as desirable as they might seem. But we have to maintain and go with the times. We have to learn and adapt to the technology and the era we live in.